All stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Well, hello, friends. Thank you for listening to the American Vindicta Show. Today, we're going to get back on to what I originally wanted this show to be, which was something that is historically related to what's going on today. We're going to take a very deep dive into a topic that Jamie Walden and myself recently were discussing with some of the original occultic backgrounds, introductions of, and also possibly the mother of communism and occultism. And we briefly mentioned this lady, but many of you probably know who I'm going to talk about, but do you know the real backstory of Madame Helena Blavatsky? Well, today we're going to talk about Helena Blavatsky and the origins of Nazi occultism. So where it all began, what influenced her, a little bit of the mysteries of her life that some critics say is completely made up, but it's the only thing we have the document to talk about. And then how this eventually led into what we call Nazi occultism. This is going to be a multiple part series. I'm tired of talking about politics, and it's time to re-educate the masses. So, without further ado, let us begin. What I am intending to do here is to connect the dots between occultism and communism. This is a dark history that we're going to be venturing into. It's filled with mysticism, black magic, human sacrifice, wars, assassinations, and a religion that is so devious that those who partake in it often become victims of their own devices. So, to begin, let us start with a well-known figure who helped to bring forth this newest version of the ancient dark religions. And we're talking about, obviously, Madame Blavatsky. And we're going to discuss her past origins. Helena Petrovna Blavatsky is often labeled the 19th century's most influential and notorious occultist. Madame Blavatsky was not only a mystic and occultist, but she was also a medium, a psychic medium, and co-founded the still existing Theosophical Society back in 1875. Her intended goal was to create a, quote, synthesis of science, religion, and philosophy. Her influences would later contribute to the short-lived brutal Nazi empire and the spread of the New Age movement and much of what you see going on with the weirdness of today. So, Miss Blavatsky was born into an aristocratic family of German descent, and I'm gonna try to pronounce this, and I know that I'm going to mess up half of what I'm going to say. Yekaterinoslav, which was then in the Russian Empire, but it's now the Dnipro in Ukraine. That's the Donbass region, the highly contested area in between Ukraine and Russia, which is also the area that you have the Naziistic Azov Battalion of the Ukraine military forces that has been ruling over this area, torturing and assassinating people, and also defending this area against the Russians for many, many years now. Blavatsky traveled widely around this Russian Empire as a child. She was largely self-educated. She developed an interest in Western esotericism during her teenage years. And before moving forward with Blavatsky's life, I wanted to discuss Western esotericism. Western esotericism, also known as esotericism, and sometimes the Western mystery tradition, is a term scholars use to categorize a wide range of loosely related ideas and movements that developed within Western society. These ideas and currents are united since they are largely distinct both from Judeo-Christian religion and the Enlightenment rationalism, or better known as the Age of Enlightenment, that dominated the 17th and the 18th century. Esotericism has pervaded various forms of Western philosophy, the religion, pseudoscience, art, literature, and even music, and it continues to influence intellectual ideas and today's popular culture. The idea of grouping a wide range of Western traditions and philosophies together under the term esotericism developed in Europe during the late 17th century. Various academics have debated various definitions of Western esotericism. One view adopts a definition from esoteric schools of thought themselves that was treating esotericism as a perennial, hidden inner tradition. And then a second perspective sees esotericism as a category of movements that embrace an enchanted worldview in the face of increasing disenchantment. A third view of Western esotericism is as a encompassing all of Western culture's rejected knowledge that is accepted neither by the scientific establishment nor by the Orthodox religions and their authorities. So the earliest traditions that later analysis would be labeled as forms of Western esotericism emerged in the Eastern Mediterranean, which was during the late antiquity. And this is where you have Hermeticism. And Hermeticism, which is a variety of philosophical systems that were drawing on Hermetic writings. You also have Gnosticism, which means to have knowledge. And this is a collection of religious ideas and systems that coalesced in the late 1st century AD among Jewish and early Christian sects. These various groups emphasized personal spiritual knowledge, which is Gnosis, above the orthodox teachings, traditions, and authority of religious institutions. Gnostic cosmogony, which is generally presents a distinction between a supreme, hidden god and a malevolent, lesser divinity, sometimes called Yahweh of the Old Testament. Now, this is their definition, all right, not mine. Now, this, I guess you could say, lesser divinity, the malevolent god, is responsible for creating the material universe. And consequently, Gnostics considered material existence flawed or evil and held the principal element of salvation to be direct knowledge of the hidden divinity attained via mystical or esoteric insight. And many Gnostic texts deal with concepts of sin, do not deal in concepts of sin and repentance, but instead with illusion and enlightenment. And then we have another one, which is Neopythagoreanism, or sometimes it's also called Neoplatonism. And this was a school of Hellenistic and Roman philosophy, which revived Pythagorean doctrines. So Neopythagoreanism was influenced by Middle Platonism, and it turned into then Neoplatonism. All right, there you go. I'm sure I've confused everybody now. So it originated in the 1st century BC, and it flourished during the 1st and 2nd centuries of AD. The Encyclopedia Britannica, 11th edition, describes Neopythagoreanism as a link in the chain between the old and the new, with Hellenistic philosophy. Central to Neopythagorean thought was the concept of a soul and its inherent desire for a unio mystica within the divine. Neopythagoreanism was an attempt to reintroduce a mystical religious element to Hellenistic philosophy in place of what could come to be regarded as the arid formalism. The founders of the school sought to invest their doctrines with a halo of tradition by ascribing them to Pythagoras and Plato. They went back to later periods of Plato's thought, the period when Plato endeavored to combine his doctrine of ideas with Pythagorean number theory and identified the good with the monad, which would give rise to Neoplatonic concept of the one, the only one. The source of the duality of the infinite and the measured, with the resultant scale of realities from the one down to the objects of the material world. They emphasize the fundamental distinction between the soul and the body. God must be worshipped spiritually by prayer and the will to be good, not in outward action. The soul must be freed from its material surrounding, the muddy vesture of decay, by an aesthetic habit of life. Bodily pleasures and all sensuous impulses must be abandoned as detrimental to the spiritual purity of the soul. God is the principle of good, matter, and the groundwork of evil. In this system can be distinguished not only the asceticism of Pythagoras and the later mysticism of Plato, but also the influence of Orphism and of the Oriental philosophy. The Platonic forms are no longer self-subsistent entities, but are the elements which constitute the continent of spiritual activity. The material universe is regarded then as the sphere of mind or as the spirit. So, a lot of big words just then thrown in, but I find that with a lot of speakers nowadays, especially within the Christian world, we throw around all these, you know, fanciful terms like esotericism, Western esotericism, but yet no one gives you definition of it. And since I decided that I'm a little bit of a book nerd, I would give you the definition. So now we're all on track with what everything our favorite guys and topics say, and let's get back to it. So during this time of Madame Blavatsky's travels around the world, we have all these varying forms of spiritual influence and these forms of esotericism. Once again, Hermeticism, Gnosticism, and Neopythagoreanism or Neoplatonism. And these were schools of thought that were developed to be very distinct and different from what became mainstream Christianity. Renaissance Europe saw increasing interest in many of these older ideas, which various intellectuals combining pagan philosophies with the Kabbalah or Jewish mysticism and Christian philosophy, resulting in the actual emergence of a esoteric movement like Christian Kabbalah and Christian Theosophy. Christian Theosophy is also known as Bohemian Theosophy and just Theosophy, which refers to a range of positions within Christianity that focus on the attainment of direct, unmediated knowledge of the nature of divinity and the origin and purpose of the universe. They have been characterized as mystical philosophies. Theosophy is considered part of Western esotericism, which believes the hidden knowledge or wisdom from the ancient past offers a path to enlightenment and then into salvation. The 7th century saw the development of initiatory societies that were professing esoteric knowledge, such as Rosicrucianism, God, words are hard today, and Freemasonry, while the Age of Enlightenment of the 18th century led to the development of new forms of esoteric thought. The 19th century saw the emergence of new trends of esoteric thought now known as Occultism. So here's the introduction of this word, occultism. Prominent groups in this century included the Theosophical Society and the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. Also important in this connection is Martinus Thompson's Spiritual Science. Then you have modern paganism, which developed with occultism and includes religious movements such as Wicca or witchcraft. That's Wicca is that thing where you'll have people say, "Oh, I'm a good witch, I'm a white witch, or I'm a witch of spirits of the forest and all this other crap." Esoteric ideas permeated the counterculture of the 1960s and later cultural tendencies, which led to the New Age phenomenon, which was in the 1970s. The idea that these varying movements could be categorized together under the rubric of a Western esotericism developed in the late 18th century, but these esoteric currents were largely ignored as a subject of academic inquiry. So the academic study of Western esotericism only emerged in the late 20th century, which was pioneered by schools like Francis Yates and Anton Favor. Esoteric ideas have meanwhile also exerted an influence on popular culture, appearing in art, literature, film, music, you name it, you see it everywhere. Now, according to Madame Blavatsky, in 1849, she embarked on a series of world travels. She visited Europe, the Americas, and India. She also claimed that during this period, she encountered a group of spiritual adepts, the, quote, masters of the ancient wisdom, who sent her to Shigatse, I believe that's how you say that, Shigatse, Tibet, where they trained her to develop a deeper understanding of the synthesis of religion, philosophy, and science. The masters of the ancient wisdom were also known as the elder brothers of the human race, adepts, mahatmas, or simply the masters. Where have you heard those keywords before? Elder brothers of the human race or the masters, all right? We'll get into that later. Both contemporary critics and then later biographers have argued that some or if not all of these foreign visits were fictitious and that she spent this period solely in Europe. But by the early 1870s, Blavatsky was involved in the spiritual movement one way or the other. Although defending the genuine existence of these spiritualist phenomena, she argued against the mainstream spiritualist idea that the entities contacted were the spirits of the dead. Relocating to the United States in 1873, Blavatsky befriended Henry Still Olcott and rose to public attention as a spirit medium or psychic medium, and the attention that included public accusations of a lot of fraudulence. So, spiritualism. Spiritualism is the metaphysical school of thought opposing physicalism, and also is the category of all spiritual beliefs and views in monism and dualism, from ancient to modern. In the long 19th century, spiritualism became most known as social religious movements, according to which an individual's awareness persists after death and may be contacted by the living. The afterlife, or the spirit world, is seen by spiritualists not as a static place, but as one in which spirits continue to evolve. These two beliefs, the contact with spirits, which they found to be possible, and that spirits are more advanced than humans, led spiritualists to the belief that spirits are capable of providing useful insight regarding moral and ethical issues, as well as about the nature of God. Some spiritualists will speak of a concept which they refer to as spirit guides. Specific spirits often contacted, who are relied upon for spiritual guidance. That's your spirit guides. Emanuel Swedenborg has some claim to be the father of spiritualism. Now, spiritism, a branch of spiritualism developed by Alan Kardec, and today practiced mostly in continental Europe and Latin America, especially in Brazil, emphasizes on reincarnation. Spiritualism developed and reached its peak growth in membership from the 1840s to the 1920s, especially in English-speaking countries. By 1897, spiritualism was said to have more than 8 million followers in the United States and Europe, mostly drawn from the middle and upper classes. Spiritualism flourished for half a century without canonical text or formal organization, attaining cohesion through periodicals, tours by trance lecturers, camp meetings, and the missionary activities of accomplished mediums. Many prominent spiritualists were women, and like most spiritualists, supported causes such as the abolition of slavery and women's suffrage. By the late 1880s, the credibility of the informal movement had been weakened due to accusations of fraud perpetrated by mediums, and formal spiritualist organizations began to appear. Spiritualism is currently practiced primarily through various denominational spiritualist churches in the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom. Now, back to Madame Blavatsky. In 1875, New York City, Madame Blavatsky co-founded the Theosophical Society with Olcott and with William Quan Judge. In 1877, she published Isis Unveiled, a book outlining her theosophical worldview, associating it closely with the esoteric doctrines of Hermeticism and Neopolitanism. Blavatsky described theosophy as the synthesis of science, religion, and philosophy, proclaiming that it was reviving an ancient wisdom, quote, ancient wisdom, which underlay all the world's religions. In 1880, she and Olcott moved to India, where the society was allied to the Arya Samaj, a Hindu reform movement. That same year, while in Ceylon, she and Olcott became the first people from the United States to formally convert to Buddhism. Although opposed by the British colonial administration, theosophy spread rapidly in India, but experienced internal problems after Blavatsky was accused of producing fraudulent paranormal phenomena. Amid ailing health in 1885, she returned to Europe, there establishing the Blavatsky Lodge in London. Here she published the book The Secret Doctrine, a commentary on what she claimed were ancient Tibetan manuscripts, as well as two further books, The Key to Theosophy and The Voice of Silence. She would later die of influenza in 1891. Madame Helena Blavatsky was a controversial figure during her lifetime. She was championed by supporters as an enlightened sage and derided as a charlatan by her critics. Her theosophical doctrines influenced the spread of Hindu and Buddhist ideas in the West, as well as the development of Western esoteric currents like Ariosophy and Anthroposophy and the New Age movement. All right. Let's now take a deep dive into Helena Blavatsky's childhood, and let's see if we can piece together her current most known form today as the most notorious occultist to have lived in modernity. I'm doing this because, just like in many dictators, tyrants, and serial killers that we study, their past experiences in their childhood usually have the best ties to the actions that they committed as adults. So, where did it all begin? Well, Madame Blavatsky was born as Helena Petrovna, Petrovna Hahn von Rottenstern in the town of Yekaterinoslav, then part of the Russian Empire. She was born August 12, 1831. Although, according to the Julian calendar used in the 19th century Russia, it was the 31st of July. So, immediately after her birth, she was baptized into the Russian Orthodox Church. At this time, in the state that she lived, it was undergoing a cholera epidemic, and her mother contracted the disease shortly after her childbirth. And despite the expectations of their doctor, both mother and child actually survived the epidemic. Now, Helena Blavatsky's family was considered aristocratic. Her mother was Helena Adrovina Hahn von Rottenstern, and she was born in 1814 to 1842. She was a self-educated 17-year-old who was the daughter of a princess, Princess Yelena Pavlovna Dolgorukia. Man, these names are hard today. A similarly self-educated aristocrat. Blavatsky's father, Peter Rottenstern, we'll just keep that one short, was born in 1798 and died in 1873. He was a descendant of the German Hahn aristocratic family who served as a captain in the Russian Royal Horse Artillery and would later rise to the rank of colonel. Peter had not been present at his daughter's birth, having been in Poland fighting to suppress the November uprising against the Russian rule. First saw her when she was about 6 months old. As well as her Russian and German ancestry, Blavatsky could also claim French heritage, for a great-great-grandfather had been a French Huguenot, which was a nobleman, who had fled to Russia to escape persecution, and there serving in the court of Catherine the Great. So, Madame Blavatsky, even with all of her occultism and mysticism and this crazy stuff, actually came from a little bit of what we would call royalty. So, as a result of her father Peter's career, the family frequently moved to different parts of the empire and were accompanied by their servants, which was a mobile childhood that may have actually influenced Blavatsky's largely nomadic lifestyle later in her life. A year after Peter's arrival in the current state that she was born in, the family relocated to the nearby army town of Romankovo. When Blavatsky was 2 years old, her younger brother, Sasha, died in another army town when no medical help could be found. In 1835, mother and daughter moved to Odessa, where Blavatsky's maternal grandfather, Andrei Fedyev, a civil administrator for the imperial authorities, had recently been posted. It was in this city that Blavatsky's sister, Vera Petrovna, was born. After a return, then, to rural Ukraine, Peter, her father, was posted at St. Petersburg, where the family moved in 1836. Blavatsky's mother liked the city, there establishing her own literary career, and penning novels under the pseudonym of Zenaida Arva, the translating works of the English novelist Edward Bulwer Lytton for Russian publications. When Peter returned to Ukraine circa in 1837, she remained in the city, and after Fedyev, the grandfather, was assigned to become a trustee of the Kalmyk people of Central Asia, Blavatsky and her mother accompanied him to Astrakhan, where they befriended a Kalmyk leader, Tumen. Now, the Kalmyks were practitioners of Tibetan Buddhism, and it was here, at this beginning, that Blavatsky gained her first experience with the religion. So if you really take a look back, had Madame Blavatsky's father been in any other position besides the one he was in now, we would have never gotten Madame Blavatsky, most likely, would have never gotten her because she would have had a prominent father figure in her life. But with the absentee father figure from always on deployments and always moving around because of being in the military, she was guided mostly by her mother and her grandfather. In 1838, Blavatsky's mother moved with her daughters to be with her husband at Poltava, where she taught Blavatsky how to play the piano and organized for her to take dance lessons. As a result of her poor health, Blavatsky's mother returned to Odessa, where Blavatsky would then learn English from a British governess. They next moved to Saratov, where a brother, Leonid, was born in June 1840. The family proceeded to Poland and then back to Odessa, where Blavatsky's mother died of tuberculosis in June 1842 at the age of 28. The three surviving children were sent to live with their maternal grandparents in Saratov, where their grandfather Andrei had been appointed governor of Saratov governorate. The historian Richard Davenport Hines described the young Blavatsky as a petted, wayward, invalid child who was a beguiling storyteller. Accounts provided by relatives reveal that she socialized largely with the lower class children of her stature, and that she enjoyed playing pranks and reading. She was educated in French art and music, and all subjects designated to enable her to find a husband. With her grandparents, she holidayed in Tumen's Kalmyk summer camp, where she learned horse riding and some Tibetan. She later claimed that in Saratov, she discovered the personal library of her maternal great-grandfather, Prince Pavel Vasilevich Dolgorukov. Sorry if I butchered that name. But it contained a variety of books on esoteric subjects, which were encouraging her burgeoning interest into this religion. Her grandfather had been initiated into Freemasonry in the late 1770s and had belonged to the Rite of Strict Observance. There were rumors that he had also met both Alessandro Cagliostro and the Count of Saint Germain. She also later stated that at this time of her life, she began to experience visions in which she encountered a mysterious Indian man, and which was the country India, and that later in life, she would meet this man in the flesh. Many biographers have considered this to be the first appearance of what we are now known to call the masters in her life story. According to some of her later accounts, in 1844 to 1845, Madame Blavatsky was taken by her father to England, where she visited London and Bath. According to the story, in London, she received piano lessons from the Bohemian composer Ignaz Moscheles, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, and performed with Clara Schumann. However, some Blavatsky biographers believe that this visit to Britain never took place, particularly as no mention of it was made in her sister's memoirs. After a year spent living with her aunt, the mother of the future Prime Minister of the Russian Empire, Sergei Witte, she moved to Tiflis, which was Tiflis, Georgia, where her grandfather, Andrei, had been appointed Director of State Lands of Transcaucasia. Blavatsky claimed that here she established a friendship with Alexander Vladimirovich Golitsyn, a Russian Freemason and member of the Golitsyn family, who encouraged her in interest into the esoteric matters. She would also claim that at this period, she had further paranormal experiences, like astral traveling, and again encountering her mysterious Indian in her visions. The biographer, Peter Washington, once described Blavatsky as a short, stout, forceful woman with strong arms, several chins, unruly hair, a determined mouth, and large, liquid, slightly bulging eyes. She had distinctive azure-colored eyes and was overweight throughout most of her life. According to the biographer Marianne Mead, Blavatsky's general appearance was outrageously untidy. In later life, she was known for wearing loose robes and wore many rings on her fingers. She was a heavy cigarette smoker throughout her life and was known for smoking hashish at times. She lived simply, and her followers believed that she refused to accept monetary payment in return for disseminating her teachings. Blavatsky preferred to be known by the acronym HPB, a sobriquet applied to her by many of her friends, which was first developed by Olcott. She avoided social functions and was scornful of social obligations. She could speak Russian, Georgian, English, French, Italian, Arabic, and Sanskrit. Mead, the biographer, referred to her as an eccentric who abided by no rules except for her own, someone who had utter disregard for the Victorian code of morality. Mead believed that Blavatsky perceived herself as a messianic figure whose purpose was to save the world by promoting theosophy. Lachman stated that Blavatsky exhibited what he referred to as the Russian traits, an intensive devotion to spiritual truth combined with a profound contradictory character. Washington, another biographer, also expressed the view that she was a persuasive storyteller with the power to fascinate others, although noted that she was also self-absorbed and egotistical. For Mead, Blavatsky had a vivid imagination and a propensity for lying. The historian Godwin noted that Blavatsky had a fearsome temper. And the religious studies scholar Bruce F. Campbell noted that she had been a strong-willed, independent child, and that the harsh environment of her childhood might have resulted in her difficulty in controlling her temper and her tendency to swear. In his opinion, she represented an archetypal charismatic leader. Anthropologist Leo Klein claimed that Blavatsky's indefatigability, that's a hard word, and energy were very surprising. The Indologist Alexander Sinkovic stated that Blavatsky's charisma exerted influence on Charles Massey and Stanton Moses. Blavatsky's sexuality has also been an issue of dispute. Many biographers have believed that she remained celibate throughout her life, with Washington, another biographer, believing that she had hated sex with her own sort of passion. In later life, she stated that she was a virgin, although she had been married to two men during her lifetime. Throughout its early years, the Theosophical Society promoted celibacy, even with marriage. Some of them even suggested that she may have been a lesbian or a transvestite due to earlier accounts in which she traveled while dressed in masculine attire. The biographer Mead thought that Blavatsky had, with a few exceptions, been contemptuous of other women, suggesting that while this may have been the result of general society misogyny, it may have actually reflected that Blavatsky had been attracted to other women. So let's talk about her social and political beliefs. The historian Godwin, that we're going to mention quite frequently here, suggested that Blavatsky's life work was not only spiritual, but socially idealistic and fiercely political. He suggested that her emotional fuel was partially a hatred of oppression, which Godwin claimed was either through the intellectual domination of Christianity or by British colonial rule throughout India. And conversely, Mead, another biographer, thought that Blavatsky was basically a non-political person. Blavatsky's social and political beliefs, like much else in her life, are not always consistent. Though it does reflect what she felt she could reveal of a larger vision. And that was, more than anything else, the vision of the secession of root races. Now we're going to start getting into some really crazy stuff from here on out. These races were a flexible category, culture as well as physiological, with races often combining in the course of history. Moreover, inspired by recent acrimonious debates over evolution, they are also dynamic, emergent forces. Gary Lockman wrote, although few historians have noted it, in Isis Unveiled, a book that she wrote in 1877, Blavatsky presented the first major intellectual, not religious, criticism of evolution. Blavatsky held that Darwinism explained human physical evolution, while spirituality followed another developmental pattern. The scholar of religion, Olav Hammer, noted that on rare occasions, Blavatsky's writings are overtly racist, adding that her anti-Semitism, her hatred of Jews, derives from the unfortunate position of Judaism as the origin of Christianity and refers to the intense dislike she felt for Christianity. She wrote that, quote, Judaism built solely on phallic worship has become one of the latest creeds in Asia and theologically a religion of hate and malice toward everyone and everything outside themselves. At the same time, we must note the extensive and appreciative use that she made of the Jewish mystical system, the Kabbalah. Although she thought that its origins were earlier than historic Judaism, Henry Steele Olcott in Old Diary Leaves, first series, tells of a, quote, a mystical Hebrew physician who had studied the Kabbalah deeply for 30 years, would discuss it with Blavatsky in lengthy conversations, and then reportedly said that despite his profound research, that, quote, he had not discovered the true meanings that she read into certain texts and that illuminated them with a holy light. In Isis Unveiled, Blavatsky praised the Jews, quote, nor should we compel the Jews to do penance for their fathers. How faithfully and nobly they have stood by their ancestral faith under diabolical persecutions. The Jews remain substantially united. Even their differences of opinion do not destroy their unity. As for Christianity, her main dislike was toward Roman Catholicism and missionary Protestantism. She had good relations with certain liberal Protestants, nor did she really offer much criticism of her Eastern Orthodoxy, but in Isis Unveiled, she spoke well of Jesus as one who, though, quote, a poor unknown Jewish carpenter and, quote, no master of social etiquette, nonetheless became a great reformer, teaching a, quote, sublime code of ethics. And also, like Paul and other early church fathers, an initiate qualified to teach and practice the ancient wisdom in terms suitable to the time and place. She also made much favorable use of Gnosticism, increasingly recognized as a valid form of early Christianity. About physical races, here we go, we're getting in the weird part. She wrote that Africans, Aboriginal Australians, and South Sea Islanders are inferior to Europeans, stating that monads of the lowest specimen of humanity – quote, the narrow-brained, savage South Sea Islander, the African, the Australian, had no karma to work, no karma to work out when first born as men, as their more favored brethren in intelligence had. She referred to Aboriginal Australians as half animal. The dynamic evolutionary nature of races must also be kept in mind, however. In the Secret Doctrine that she wrote, she postulates that if tomorrow the continent of Europe were to disappear and other lands reemerge instead, and if the African tribes were to separate and scatter on the face of the earth, it is they who, in about 100,000 years hence, would form the bulk of the civilized natures. Thus, the reason given for dividing humanity into superior and inferior races falls to the ground and becomes a fallacy. Moving on, we shall discuss the Theosophy, the Masters, and the, quote, ancient wisdom. Blavatsky was the leading theoretician of the Theosophical Society and was responsible for establishing its doctrinal basis. The ideas expounded in her published texts provide the basis from which the society and wider theosophical movement emerged. Blavatsky's theosophical ideas were a form of occultism. She subscribed to the anti-Christian current of thought within Western esotericism, which emphasized the idea of an ancient and universal occult science, that's her word, occult science, that should be revived. Now, Blavatsky stated that the theosophical teachings were passed on to her by adepts who lived in various parts of the world. Fundamentally, the underlying concept behind Blavatsky's theosophy was that there was an ancient wisdom religion which had once been found across the world and which was known to various ancient figures such as the Greek philosopher Plato and the ancient Hindu sages. Blavatsky connected this ancient wisdom religion to Hermetic philosophy, a worldwide view which everything in the universe is identified as an emanation from a godhead. Blavatsky believed that all of the world's religions developed from this original global faith. Blavatsky understood that her theosophy to be the heir to the Neoplatonist philosophers of late antiquity, who had also embraced Hermetic philosophy. Blavatsky claimed that due to Christianization of Europe, this magical tradition was lost there, but it persisted in modified form in India and in Africa, promoting a self-consciously magical disenchantment narrative. In turn, Blavatsky believed that the Theosophical movement's revival of the ancient wisdom religion would lead to its spreading across the world, eclipsing the established world religions, and thus, in bringing these theosophical ideas to humanity, in which Blavatsky viewed herself as a messianic figure. According to the historian Goodrick Clark, the Theosophical Society disseminated an elaborate philosophical edifice involving a cosmogony and macrocosm of the universe, which were spiritual hierarchies and intermediary beings, and later having correspondence with a hierarchical conception of the microcosm of man. Officially, the society based itself upon the following three objectives. 1. To form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, caste, or color. 2. To encourage the study of comparative religion, philosophy, and science. 3. To investigate the unexplained laws of nature and the powers latent in man. Some believe the purpose of these three precepts was to lead the discovery of the powers latent in man through the occult study of science, philosophy, and religion, which shall be preferred, shall be the preferred route to the society, of the social harmony and equality, which will prefigure and perhaps become the divine harmony. While living in New York City, Blavatsky had referred to herself then as a Buddhist, although officially embraced Buddhism only while in Ceylon. However, Lockman, another one of her biographers, stated that her Buddhism was highly eccentric and had little to do with the Buddhism of scholars like Max Müller or that of your average Buddhist. Blavatsky argued that the Buddha had sought to return to the teachings of the Vedas, and that Buddhism therefore represented a more accurate survival of ancient Brahmanism, more than Hinduism. Although critical of Catholicism and Protestants and opposing their growth in Asia, throughout her life she remained highly sympathetic to the Russian Orthodox Church, and she even commented that, quote, "With the faith of the Russian Church, I will not even compare Buddhism." Here, once again, is where things get really interesting. We're going to talk about her theology, cosmogony, and the place of humanity. Blavatsky expounded that she could best be described as a monotheistic, immanentist, and a mystical cosmology. Blavatsky was a pantheist, and she emphasized the idea of an impersonal divinity, referring to the theosophical God as a universal divine principle. This is her quote, "the root of all, from which all proceeds, and within which all shall be absorbed at the end of the great cycle of being." She was dismissive of the Christian idea of God in the Western world, describing it as a bundle of contradictions and logical impossibility. She stated that the universe emanated from this divine principle, with each particle of matter being infused with a spark of the divine. So lower orders emanated from higher ones before becoming increasingly dense and being absorbed back into the divine principle. This cosmology exhibited commonalities with the scientific discoveries of geology and biological evolution, both of which have been revealed by scientific inquiry during the 19th century. In the book, The Secret Doctrine, Madame Blavatsky articulated the belief that in the beginning of time, there were absolute nothingness. This primordial essence then separated itself into seven rays, which were also intelligent beings known as the Dian Kohans. These seven rays then created the universe using an energy called Fohat. The earth was created and underwent seven rounds, in each of these which different living beings were created. Blavatsky advocated the idea of root races, each of which was divided into sub-races. In Blavatsky's cosmogony, the first root race were created from pure spirit and lived on a continent known as the Imperishable Sacred Land. That's probably where the Flat Earthers are. The second root race, known as the Hyperboreans, were also formed from pure spirit and lived on a land near to the North Pole, which then had a mild climate. The third lived on the continent Lumeria, which Blavatsky alleged survives today as Australia and Rapa Nui. Blavatsky alleged that during the fourth round of Earth, higher beings descended to the planet with the beginnings of human physical bodies developing and the sexes then separating. At this point, the fourth root race appeared, living on the continent of, Atlantis. They had physical bodies, but also psychic powers and advanced technology. She claimed that some Atlanteans were giants and built such ancient monuments as Stonehenge in southern England, and that they also mated with she-animals, resulting in the creation of gorillas and chimpanzees. The Atlanteans were decadent, they abused their power and their knowledge, so Atlantis sunk into the sea, although various Atlanteans escaped and created new societies in Egypt and then in the Americas. The fifth root race to emerge was the Aryans, and was found across the world at the time that she was writing. She believed that the fifth race would come to be replaced by the sixth, which would be heralded by the arrival of the Maitreya. I hope I pronounced that right. A figure of Mahayana Buddhist mythology. She further believed that humanity would eventually develop into the final seventh root race. Now, historian Lockman suggests that by reading Blavatsky's cosmogonical claims as a literal account of history, quote, "we may be doing it a disservice." He instead suggests that it could be read as Blavatsky's attempt to formulate a new myth for the modern age, or as a huge, fantastic science fiction story. Madame Blavatsky taught that humans composed of three separate parts, a divine spark, an astral fluid body, and then the physical body. Later, Blavatsky proclaimed that septenary of man and the universe, and that according to Blavatsky, man is composed of seven parts: the Atma, the Buddhi, Manas, the Kamarupa, Linga Sharira, Prana, and the Stula Sharira. In Isis Unveiled, Blavatsky denied that humans would be reincarnated back on Earth after physical death. However, by the time that she had authored The Secret Doctrine, she had changed her opinion on this issue, likely influenced by her time in India. Now here, she stated that the law of reincarnation was governed by karma, with humanity's final purpose of being emancipation, or being the emancipation of the soul from the cycle of death and rebirth. She believed that knowledge of karma would ensure the human beings lived according to moral principles, arguing that it provided a greater basis for moral action than that of the Christian doctrine. She super hated Christianity, if you can't tell by now. Blavatsky wrote in Isis Unveiled that spiritualism, quote, "alone offers a possible last refuge of compromise between the revealed religions and materialistic philosophies." While she acknowledged that fanatic believers remained blind to its imperfections, she wrote that such a fact was no excuse to doubt its reality, and asserted that spiritualist fanaticism was itself a proof of genuineness and possibility of their phenomena. Goodrick Clark, historian, noted that Blavatsky's cosmology contained all four of the prime characteristics of Western esotericism that had been identified by the scholar Antoine Favre. A correspondence between all parts of the universe, the macrocosm and the microcosm. B, living nature as complex, plural, hierarchical, an animate whole. C, imagination and mediations in the form of intermediary spirits, symbols, and mandalas. And D, the experience of transmutation of the soul through purification and ascent. Blavatsky's writings garnered the materials of Neoplatonism, Renaissance magic, Kabbalah, and Freemasonry, together with ancient Egyptian and Greco-Roman mythology and religion, joined by Eastern doctrines taken from Buddhism and Advaita Vedanta to present the idea of an ancient wisdom handed down from prehistoric times. That's a quote from historian Nicholas Goodrich Clark. All right. So, now we know a little bit about Blavatsky. The next part of this series, we are going to talk about the connections of Madame Blavatsky's theosophy to Nazi Germany. Stay tuned. The next one's going to get wild. Thanks for listening. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.